nation as weapons of survival and progress.
Next on What's the Frequency, Kenneth?
Unfortunately, there's a lot of folks that come across. Where do they want to end up? A lot want to come to, because everyone wants to come to Florida.
I'm Paul Fisher.
And so we've worked on innovative ways to be able to protect the state of Florida from the impact of Biden's border policy.
Governor DeSantis of Florida and Governor Abbott of Texas, two potential GOP contenders for the 24 presidential race, have been pushing the border issue with some attention-grabbing photo ops, now escalating their tactics of shipping migrants from their borders to other states. Governor Abbott sent two busloads to the Naval Observatory, the official residence of Vice President Kamala Harris. And guess what? Fox News just happened to be there for the arrival.
This is something new. Buses filled with migrants from our southern border have just arrived outside Vice President Kamala Harris's residence at the Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C. Griff Jenkins is live on the scene to tell us more. Griff, is that Massachusetts Avenue that I'm looking at right there?
Yeah. Good morning, Steve, Anthony, and Brian. This bus just arrived moments ago. I talked to some of the folks. Apparently, this bus has come from Del Rio, Texas. That's what a gentleman on the bus told me. And these, pardon me, they don't dare us?
Venezuela?
Habla inglés?
No.
No? La Presidenta Harris dice que frontera cerrado. La frontera es cerrado or abierto?
Abierto.
Abierto. So what she's saying, Steve, I asked her if Vice President Harris says that the border is closed. She says it's open as we see these migrants coming across now.
They're playing games. These are political stunts with real human beings who are fleeing harm. Do you know what's happening in Venezuela right now? There were children, people being put on a bus or a plane who don't know where they're going or where they were being sent. Human beings, real people who have fled harm. Came to the United States of America seeking refuge, asylum. I think it is the height of irresponsibility, much less just frankly a dereliction of duty when you are an elected leader to play those kinds of games with human life. and human beings. If you think there is a problem, be part of the solution.
Sent two plane loads of migrants to Martha's Vineyard.
You have folks that are inclined to think Florida is a good place. Our message to them is we are not a sanctuary state. And it's better to be able to go to a sanctuary jurisdiction. And yes, we will help facilitate that transport for you. To be able to go to greener pastures.
Of course, if that were true, DeSantis could have given some advance notice to Martha's Vineyard before the plane loads of migrants arrived there, but he didn't. Making it clear that the real agenda was a cynical misuse of migrants to own the libs, not to help out migrants.
Well, so, you know, at the beginning, it was all emergency funding by our private foundations, individuals. That continues to happen. But what we're seeing now is municipal governments are starting to kick in. The mayor declare an emergency, which allows her government to put money. She's allotted $10 for this response. You can see New York doing the same thing, Chicago doing the same thing. We have FEMA now that's supporting our efforts of receiving the immigrants. So funding is beginning to come through, and we have a better infrastructure than we did. At the beginning of this, so that's what the Republican governors do not like, the fact that they try to hurt us.
Some of these people, I've been told, traveled months just to get to the border. And then we're sent here in an airplane with very little information about where they're going or why they were going there.
But even though no one told Martha's Vineyard the migrants were coming, lo and behold, footage of the arrival showed up on Fox Digital News, just in time for a Tucker Carlson segment with the Trumper candidate from Arizona, a state whose GOP governor has also shipped migrants out of state.
I just have to throw this at you, and because you live in a border state that has borne the brunt of the lawlessness on our border. We've just received digital footage of illegal aliens being dropped off in Martha's Vineyard. Apparently, the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, flew them there on the idea that communities, border towns in Texas and Arizona are bearing all the brunt, and maybe the people who make these policies should have to live with them. What's your view of this?
Actually, I get a kick out of it watching these liberal mayors just, you know, throw their hands up and say we can't handle it because it's life every day for us in these border states. However, I'm not a fan of it, Tucker. I mean, we're just taking people here illegally who shouldn't be here. We're moving them further inland.
In a
plan is the most bold, aggressive plan on the border. We're going to secure the border. We're going to call it what it is, issue a declaration of invasion on day one, get troops on the border in the form of our National Guard. We're going to stop people from coming over. And we're going to stop the cartels from having control of our border.
A footnote, some reports point out that it was Tucker Carlson who brought up the idea of sending migrants from the border to Martha's Vineyard back in July. Some historians note the idea goes back way further, way back when Southern whites told black residents there were homes and jobs waiting for them if they agreed to move north. There are reports the migrants from Florida and Texas were falsely promised shelter, visas, working papers, and jobs if they agreed to board the buses and planes, taking them to other states.
Well, we should be clear that this is, as you stated, a humanitarian crisis created by human hands. And it is an all hands on deck moment, but we're all supposed to come together and coordinate. Coordination during a crisis is something that we must do together, and that's the federal government, that is also the governor of the state of Texas, as well as the governor of the state of Florida. We should not be really treating other cities and municipalities in the manner that we're witnessing now. Resources for housing, resources to make sure that we can properly give people the medical care, all of the basic necessities that you would give new arrivals that enter a city.
Well, I can tell you this. I've been to the Salvation Army Rescue Center in Chicago, and I've met with the people who came off the buses. I sat down with one of the families, and they told me the story. It is pathetic that these governors are taking advantage of these helpless people, making promises to them to get on the bus and life is just going to be fine. And off they go to places far removed from where they're supposed to be appearing under the requirements of our law. In a matter of weeks and months. So he's jeopardizing their stay in the United States when each governor makes this decision. The second part I want to raise is this, Chuck. Why is it when the Republicans want to enforce their immigration theories, it's always the kids that end up being a victim? We saw it with kids in cages. We saw it with the forcible removal of children from their parents, some who've never been reunited with their families. And now, once again, it's the kids and families that are put on these buses and transported for political purposes across the United States.
No, I believe it's a crisis that needs more coordination from our country. You know, know, this is one country. This is a country that has always been capable of handling those who were seeking to participate in the American dream. And that coordination should be not only on the federal level, the state level, but even cities to cities. And we reached out to the El Paso mayor, as well as our team attempted to reach out to Governor Abbott. They refused to do any form of coordination. They think the politics of treating people in a humane manner to cover up, I believe, what they have done around human rights, the erosion of it for these last few years, is what they believe is the best way to handle it. I just disagree.
Anyway, despite all the talk of backlash, there's no evidence Abbott and DeSantis have paid a political price in their re-election bids among home state voters. And at least for now, they did manage to change the subject from banning abortion. Since the search at Mar-a-Lago, where Trump had a stash of top-secret documents, Trumpers have once again been playing footsie with threats of violence. And Trump himself is doing it too. Like this exchange on the Hugh Hewitt radio program.
Now, Mr. President, you know the old saying.
We had an amazing 4 years.
You know the old saying, a prosecutor can indict a ham sandwich if they want to. I'm just asking, if there is such a prosecutor and they indict you, would that deter you from running for president again?
I don't think the people of the United States would stand for it. If a thing like that happened, I would have no prohibition against running. You know that. You've always.
I do. And that's what I want people to understand. That would not take you out of the arena.
It would not. But I think if it happened, I think you'd have problems in this country, the likes of which perhaps we've never seen before. I don't think the people of the United States would stand for it.
What kind of problems, Mr. President?
I think they'd have big problems. Big problems. I just don't think they'd stand for it. They will not sit still and stand for this ultimate of hoaxes. I don't think the people of this country would stand for it.
Especially since they know
I'm totally innocent.
You know that the legacy media will say you're attempting to incite violence with that statement. How do you respond to what will inevitably...
That's not inciting. I'm just saying what my opinion is. I don't think the people of this country would stand for it.
Threats from Trump world have not gone unnoticed.
This morning, former President Trump was saying that if he were to be indicted, that the people wouldn't stand for it. He was asked if that was a suggestion or an incitement to violence. Is it your sense that the DOJ is concerned that if they were to take any action against the former president, that such violence would materialize?
That question was not asked, and I don't know the answer to it, but I can tell you my personal feelings. Inviting the mob to return to the streets is exactly what happened here January 6, 2021. This president knew what he was doing at that rally, and we saw the results. Five people died and 149 law enforcement agents were injured. His careless and inflammatory rhetoric has its consequences. That's why I believe he is not qualified to serve as president of the United States, nor should he be considered.
Of Trump versus DOJ over Trump's classified document stash at Mar-a-Lago came to Brooklyn. Lawyers for both sides were summoned there by the special master assigned to review the documents. Among other things, the special master asked Trump's lawyers to clarify whether Trump is claiming he declassified the documents. Reportedly, Trump's lawyers declined to answer, saying the answer could play into their future legal strategy. At the Court of Appeals in Atlanta, a victory for DOJ. A three-judge panel unanimously granted DOJ permission to use the classified documents to continue its criminal investigation while the special master reviews them, leaving Trump lawyers scrambling to appeal that. Trump was in Ohio at a rally where he insulted J.D. Vance, the candidate he endorsed for the Senate. But what got the most attention was Trump cozying up yet again to QAnon conspiracies. People really shouldn't be that surprised.
Elected leaders of the Republican Party downplay the violence of January 6th, and they demand that all others do the same. This has become a litmus test. It's as if the hundreds of serious injuries to Capitol police officers who defended our Capitol that day were inconsequential. Those who are protecting Donald Trump, elected leaders of my party, are now willing to condemn FBI agents, Department of Justice officials, and pretend that taking top secret SCI documents and keeping them in a desk drawer in an office in Mar-a-Lago or in an unsecured location anywhere was somehow not a problem. They are attempting to excuse this behavior. They're attempting to say that it was normal, that it was a storage issue. A number of people in this room have worked in national security positions in our federal government. You all know this is a grave problem. And apparently, the Department of Justice has evidence that Donald Trump lied about having these documents, and he lied repeatedly. This has now become excusable too, if you judge by the actions of the elected officials in my party. Does defending Donald Trump now mean excusing obstruction of justice? How many of our elected officials today are willing to do that? Bit by bit, excuse by excuse, we're putting Donald Trump above the law. We are rendering indefensible conduct normal, legal, and appropriate, as though he were a king. And now, Donald Trump has been suggesting, not even subtly, that any legal action against him could result in violence. Former president is apparently now suggesting that if he is prosecuted, his supporters should stand up to our constitutional order and the rule of law. Stand up and through whatever means are needed, prevent his prosecution. Prevent the application of the law. It is hard to see this as anything but a direct threat to our Constitution, to our Republic, and a credible one at that. One can only wonder, is this where the Republican Party will go next? That prosecution is inappropriate because MAGA will violently oppose it. All of us have an obligation to acknowledge what is happening. Those activities that I have just listed for you, those are the erosion of the rule of law.
Hello, I'm Dan Rather, and you're listening to What's the Frequency, Kenneth? With musical host Paul Fisher in New York City.
Gen 6 committee has been trying to reconstruct events.
You took it out, but you can put it back. You took it out, but you can put it back. You took the swig and then you take a crack.
Even though Secret Service text messages from January 5th and 6th were deleted.
One way to take us all to the shore. Can't say it's what you bargained for. It's forever.
Committee members of Lofgren says the committee has made progress on that front.
Well, the rules don't allow us to go into the specifics of the evidence that we have. But I will say that apparently some of the text messages were permanently deleted. Some have been recovered. Some of the evidence that has been sent over is... not just text messages, but there's emails, there's radio traffic.
Break the law. One way to take us all to the shore.
There's Teams meetings. It's a whole variety of things. It's voluminous.
Up to the edge of the edge of the edge of the edge of the edge.
Some of it is relevant, some of it isn't. Methodically to have everything in front of us so that we know what to do next. Well, I think you can get call records to see, but what were within the tweets, and not tweets, but texts. You don't know. But we will be piecing together information.
One way to take us all.
Obviously, there's witness testimony to come.
It's forever at the push of a button.
We just want to find out what happened. And be able to... put that information together with the rest of the information we have for a complete picture, because part of our obligation, as you know, is not just to fact find and disclose, but to promulgate suggestions. Both legislative and administrative. That will keep our country safer in the future. So, we're also working on those issues, those recommendations, as we continue to finish this investigation.
I'm announcing that today we are filing a lawsuit against Donald Trump for violating the law as part of his efforts to generate profits for himself, his family, and his company.
Adding to Trump's legal woes, a new civil lawsuit by New York State alleging massive financial fraud and conspiracy.
The complaint demonstrates that Donald Trump falsely inflated his net worth by billions of dollars, unjustly enriched himself, and to cheat the system, thereby cheating all of us.
Besides financial penalties, the suit would bar Trump from doing business in the state.
He did this with the help of the other defendants, his children. Donald Trump Jr., Ivanka Trump, and Eric Trump.
Thank you. Some of the latest talk about the midterms is still centered on the idea that the red wave has hit a blue barrier. Because of GOP support for abortion bans and Trumpers denying election results and promoting culture wars. The upshot, even Mitch McConnell thinks the GOP prospects have dimmed for retaking the Senate, and House Republicans have an uphill fight to take the House by big numbers. Some pollsters warn that the shift in Democrats' favor is overstated, just like it was for Biden's victory margin in battleground states, because Democrats were overrepresented in polling samples, because Trumpers don't like to talk to pollsters. Into this mix, enter Nancy Pelosi, who's been talking up prospects that Democrats will keep control of the House and maybe even pick up some seats. She said it recently on the road in Colorado.
We have absolutely every intention of holding the House, and the path to that victory comes right through Colorado.
Pelosi's optimism raised some eyebrows in the press corps. No one doubts Speaker Pelosi's knack for counting votes in Congress, but some think her comments were a pep talk, not a prediction. Like in 2010, when she made similar predictions, but lost more than 60 House seats to the Republicans. And yet, in her latest comment, she seemed annoyed with reporters and their skepticism.
Yes, sir.
Madam Speaker, you've predicted that House Democrats are going to defy the odds and actually pick up seats in this recent election, and thus retain the chamber. At the same time, we often hear calls for generational change for the Democratic Party and within American politics generally. Insider reported just this week that this Congress is statistically the oldest one ever. If Democrats do retain the House, do you plan to seek another term as Speaker? Why or why not?
Not after that glorious introduction you gave. Look. Right now, my focus is on holding the House. How many times have I told you over the past year and a half plus that the Democrats would hold the House? Despite some of the so-called conventional, so-called wisdom in Washington, D.C., saying that in the off year, the president's party always loses Congress or seats. The fact is, that isn't conventional, and it isn't wisdom, because convention has changed. We communicate in a different way. We have a different reality here now in terms of our own democracy being on the ballot. Our planet being on the ballot. The future of our country being on the ballot. Also, we always believed we would win, so we always prepared for it. Mobilization to own the ground. Our distinguished chairman, Sean Patrick Maloney, began that even before January 6th. As soon as he was chosen by our colleagues to be the chair, even before January 6th, you can just imagine the momentum it picked up. Secondly, our mobilization depends on messaging, and the legislation that we are passing has been very, very, shall we say, encouraging to our grassroots. And then the third is, of course, the resources. It begins with an M, but I don't like to bring it up. The resources needed to win. So we have been ready. So when the Supreme Court decision came down, it wasn't a case of, oh, if only we had known. No, we were ready because we believed and because we saw the urgency of it. Now, in addition to that, forgetting what we believe and what we were prepared for, the most important part of it is our candidates believed. They believed in the future, they believed in themselves, they believed that they could win in those districts. So we were in place with a great array of candidates, a few more chosen since that decision. But the decision has really made a remarkable difference. But even so, our kitchen table issues are where people make their decisions as well, whether the cost of prescription drugs, the rest of it. But again, one's right to choose is a kitchen table issue in terms of family decision making. And so we're pretty excited about the prospects. This morning we were able to welcome to our caucus two newly sworn in members. It's Congressman Ryan of New York, Congressman Mel Tola of Alaska. Two places nobody expected us to win. Including the Republicans. So we're very proud of the success that we're having, and we fully intend to hold the House. And even though there are some among you who belittle my political instincts and the rest, I got us here twice to the majority, and I don't intend to arguing it up.
Perseverance is exploring Jezero Crater, and this crater held a lake about 3.5 billion years ago, a very large lake, about 40 kilometers across. And the evidence for that is very clear in this first image. On the west side of the image is the crater rim. This is about 1 kilometer high. And you can see that that crater rim is breached by a canyon.
And now news from Mars.
That canyon transported water into the lake, and it also transported sediment. And when that sediment was brought into the lake, hit the slack water of the lake, the sediment deposited and formed the delta, the feature that's labeled on this image. That's where we have been working recently.
And the status of the Perseverance Mars rover mission to collect rock samples, which will be flown back to Earth at some point for direct analysis.
It allows us to explore an ancient habitable environment. It allows us to seek evidence of possible Martian life in rocks deposited at that time. About 3.5 billion years ago. And I want to emphasize, this mission is not looking for extant life, things that are alive today. Instead, we're looking into the very distant past when Mars's climate was very different than it is today. And I want to emphasize the idea of diversity. The objective of diversity is to allow these samples, when they come back, to be studied for a huge range of topics, not just to astrobiology. There are a huge number of questions. That can only be answered by samples that are brought back to Earth and investigated in terrestrial laboratories. So I'm happy to say that we have made excellent progress towards achieving the goals that I just laid out. We've also managed to piece together quite a detailed history of Jezero Crater, a history that is surprising. It's not exactly what we expected. So we have an indication that there is a significant amount of material that was deposited in this crater after it formed. It is undoubtedly, now we know, it is a mixture of different kinds of things, including the igneous rocks that I described, as well as the sedimentary rocks. And the reality is, all we can really know is what's exposed at the surface. So whether there are lake deposits that lie below the igneous rocks, we don't know. Of how long the lake was present, this is an important question, and it is very difficult to determine that with the rover. This is the kind of thing that we are hoping to do with the return samples.
Of course, there was the inevitable question, the one that's the basis of sci-fi classics through the decades, from Triffids to Andromeda strains to invasions of body snatchers, and you name it.
Could you talk about how NASA approaches and thinks about planetary protection? Especially when considering bringing samples like these back to our planet.
Yeah, and that is a really, really important question, and we want to keep talking about it and talking with the public and getting the public's questions on this. So the first thing I really want to do is stress that right now the conditions on Mars are really not conducive to life. We really do not expect anything to be alive on the surface there today. Number one, it's extremely dry. It's extremely cold. And life there would be exposed to a really deadly radiation environment with very little atmosphere to protect anything on the surface. That radiation would likely, kill anything that were there on the surface. Unlikely. The probability of something being alive on the surface that could be dangerous is very small. That being said, we are still being very cautious. We are making sure that when the samples are launched into orbit and then transferred and captured into this capture and containment system on the Earth Return Orbiter, there's multiple layers of seals in there so that we've done something we call breaking the chain. So that there's no chance of any of the Mars material actually getting outside of that Earth return system. And coming into the Earth's atmosphere. All of the Mars material will be contained inside of that Earth return system.
music and sound bites, you can go to the program's Facebook page. What's the Frequency, Paul? I'm Paul Fisher.
$10 a month. It's the price of a gigabyte of data for that iPad you never use. It's two overpriced coffees you ordered when you forgot to look at the menu. It's your overzealous attempts to meet the credit card minimum at the bodega on the corner. But $10 a month could be a lot more. Become a BAI buddy and commit to a recurring monthly donation to WBAI. This money will help us continue to broadcast the thoughts and perspectives of the progressive public. A BAI buddy is also not without perks. Your monthly contribution will earn you a WBAI tote bag and a member card offering Zipcar sales, discounted meals at select restaurants, and a handful of other benefits. You will also become a full voting member of WBAI, and our diverse programming will reflect your voice. Go to give to WBAI.